And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Well, today we're going to have a power-packed program, and I'll tell you, you'll want to get out your pencil or your pen and some paper. You're going to want to take down the name of a book, because I've got the author. He's going to be talking to us about the subject matter of this book. I believe, I'm going to make a statement here right now, I believe that this book, this one book, has the answer to 98% of America's horrible problems today. Did you hear what I said? This one book has the answers, the explanations, and the solutions to about 98% of the most terrible problems in America today, whether it's illegal immigration, whether it's the Iraq war. This is the book you need. It's a book of history, but it's a book of today's current events. It's a book that will tell you why you're working so hard and not getting ahead, why your wife has to work, why our children have very little of a future compared to what we had. It will tell the story of why people are dying from bad drugs. This is a book that you need. The cover of the book, I think, tells a little bit about it. There's words, terms on it, such as the enemy within. Here's something else the front cover says. It says that this book is the shocking story of the infiltration and subversion of what? Well, of the American nationalist or constitutional movement. If you believe in America, and you believe that we had, or maybe, God willing, have the potential to be a real godsend to this world, to be a country that really is a shining light on a hill, but somehow the darkness has entered in and snuffed out, extinguished that light, you need to have this book. It's entitled The Judas Goats. The Judas Goats. Those two words juxtaposed together. Think about it. The Judas Goats. I'm going to ask the author, Michael Collins Piper, in just a moment, why he chose this title. At first, it sort of revolted me. I thought, the Judas Goats? You see, because the Bible itself has so much to say about, well, Judas. That doesn't need much explanation. I don't have to read you Bible verses. We know about his betrayal of Jesus for money. And then the goats. You know, in the Bible, the Lord says he will, in the last days, divide the sheep from the goats. The goats are of Satan. They're satanic. And they're opposed to all things good, all pure things. Who are these goats? And do we have Judases today? Who are these Judas goats? Well, this book is 366 pages. And I'm not ashamed to tell you that if you don't have it, you're going to miss out. A lot of you have ordered, I know the friends of this ministry have ordered the new book we've just published called The Synagogue of Satan. Well, if this book had not already been published, I would have published it too. It is a complement to that book. With these two books in hand, you will know the future, the present, and the history of this incredible, shocking story of infiltration and subversion. I want to welcome Michael Collins Piper to the program. He's author of many books. I think the very best book there is on the JFK assassination. I put it on the order with a Jim Mars book, Crossfire. Jim Mars is, we always kid each other and say we're cousins. I believe we are. Jim Mars did a great book in all kind of technical data and such detail about the JFK assassination. Then along comes Michael Collins Piper, and shows who did it. So the same way there, if you have Jim Maher's book, Crossfire, well, you need The Final Judgment, which tells you the true story of the JFK assassination. It's the most tremendous book, and I read it, and I recognized right away it was true. The first book, really, that was truth about the JFK assassination. But now he has a book talking about JFK, about Richard Nixon. Hey, was there assassination of Richard Nixon? I'm going to ask Michael Collins Piper in a minute about that. There's everything. You want to know the truth about McCarthyism? This book talks about it. Hey, Michael Piper, welcome to Power of Prophecy.
Tex, it's great to be back on your program. I know there's a lot of people out there listening, and it's good to be among like-minded folks.
Well, Michael, a lot of people already have your other books that we've offered, two or three books, of yours that you've published. But this one, you know, people say, they love to say, oh, you people are sensationalist. You conspiratorial people. You're just outrageous. Do you think that I was overstating the case when I introduced your book about its importance?
No, not at all. I hate to tout my own book, but, you know, as I mentioned to you before we came on the broadcast, I realized as I was preparing for this program today that in many respects, my book, The Judas Goats, is very much a supplement to what Andrew Carrington Hitchcock has written in this excellent book, Synagogue of Satan. His book is this overwhelming, detailed history of how Jewish power and influence, particularly through the venue of the Rothschild banking dynasty, how that power and influence came to rule supreme in our world today. But what my book, The Judas Goats, does, essentially, is to show how agents provocateur, infiltrators, people of this ilk have been implementing the agenda of the Rothschilds. How they counteract those who work to undermine or to bring down the influence of the Rothschilds, the Zionist movement, the Talmudists, and that's what the Judas Goats is all about. It's a really very panoramic study of how the agents of the Rothschilds have worked to eliminate those who stand in opposition to their agenda. That's what the book is all about. So it's in many, although my book actually came out before Synagogue of Satan, it would have almost been appropriate for my book to have been published after it, because it's really a continuing thread. It's like part two of how they operate.
Yeah, this is an inside story, and it reads like a novel, but, unfortunately, it's true and totally documented. Now, let's go to that title, that very catchy and almost revolting title, The Judas Goats. In your table of contents, I looked across, and there's this illustration, this picture, this drawing. Now, this leads to who the Judas Goats worship, and maybe the meaning of the goat. And I want to ask you about that drawing. I think you know the one I mean, the occultic Baphomet symbol. And then after that, I want to talk to you about what they worship in addition to this god, either indirectly, which has to do with money. And I'll talk to you right across from your preface, the 500 shekel note, let's just call it. That's what it is. And the figure on it that Israel has honored as its the father of Israel, the individual. First, this horrible, hideous, goat-like figure. Tell us a little bit about that and why that's in the book.
Well, before I do that, Texas, one thing I want to mention. A lot of people are not familiar with the term Judas goats, and it's more down-to-earth practical meaning. Mm-hmm. A Judas goat is, obviously, it has the biblical connotations, the concept of betrayal. In the livestock industry, when lambs are being led to the slaughter, what the ranchers do, is they get a goat to lead the lambs to the slaughter.
Hmm.
And that is what a Judas goat is in its practical definition. It's a goat, a four-legged goat, that leads the lambs to the slaughter.
Wow.
Well, what's interesting about this particular picture in the book that you're referring to, though, is that it illustrates another form of the Judas goat that people are not familiar with. And now, there are many people who are familiar, and you, in your book, and I'm sorry, the name of it escapes me, Codex Magica, that wonderful book that you put out showing all these occult influences in our modern society. In that book, you have many illustrations of the Baphomet symbol. It's a goat-headed figure that's used in satanic rites. Well, in the Judas goats, I have reproduced an illustration from the 19th century of a Judas goat, the Baphomet symbol, which is being hailed almost like a god by a 19th century Scottish Rite Freemasonic initiation ceremony. It shows these members of the Masonic order in their robes carrying this, it's like a human being with a goat head and wings, looking like a very picture of the devil himself. And this is a Freemasonic ceremony, Tex. If there's any doubt in anyone's mind that Freemasonry is a form of what we'll just call satanic worship, this picture alone should tell them the truth. Because any group that hails a Judas goat, which is another name for the Baphomet, and vice versa, this group is obviously satanic. And we know the influence of the Freemasons throughout history. So that is why I chose this very provocative, very disturbing, very ugly picture in some respects to put inside of this book, because it answers all the questions right up front. It answers the question. It demonstrates that these forces of evil in our world today go beyond our existence here on this planet. It's a very spiritual battle that's been going on for thousands of years, and the manifestations of it with groups such as the Anti-Defamation League and other elements of the Israeli lobby, the American Civil Liberties Union, all these alphabet groups that are active around the world today, they are carrying out the dirty work, the dirty deeds, the dirty tricks, the black operations of this very evil, what we might want to call black nobility, among the Rothschilds and the people in their spheres of influence. These are the people who do run the world. They have an immense amount of power and money that they've accumulated over centuries, and they seed other families and financial groups that become their satellites and do their dirty work. But at the lower levels, we have the politicians who are the puppets. But then on an even lower level, we have the political activists who prop up the political machine. And it is at this level, which is where these Judas goats that I've described in this book operate. These are the people who make sure that the Rothschild Zionist influence remains supreme inside the think tanks, inside the conservative movement, inside the CIA and the FBI. That's what the Judas goats are, as I define them in my book. These are the people who are out there carrying out the agenda on a political level of these very sinister and very satanic forces operating at the very highest levels.
Well, you know, in this illustration, and of course we could have a whole program just on this, but I want to mention that this Judas goat figure, this Baphomet, this androgynous, you know, half male, half female, this horrible horned devil god with the flame coming out of its head, the torch, supposedly the torch of liberty, but really of bondage, that in his hand you see the symbol. One hand is pointed upward, one arm and hand is pointed downward, which is the occultic motto, you might say, or the goal, which is as above, so below. So the boast by Satan that he will create on this planet a paradise of his own, a Zionist utopia, and replace God. So he brings heaven down to earth, And this is the meaning, of course, for one finger pointed up, the other finger pointed down. And that's what I show in Codex Magica. So this actually is a goal, an ultimate goal of Zionist imperialism. And I believe very strongly, Michael, that your book is important in this aspect, because this goal, this Zionist imperialist goal of internationalism, you know, the concept that Hillary Clinton's rabbi friend Michael Lerner even has a magazine by the name of Tikkun, T-I-K-K-U-N, which means to revise or rebuild or renew the world. So they're planning to conquer the world, destroy the old world and all its vestiges, and on the ashes up will come the phoenix, a new utopia led by the Jews, and the Gentiles, of course, will be their servants, their slaves, and will meet their every need. This is what I see is the meaning of this horrible Baphomet image. Now, to do that, then they must control the money. Now we get to the other illustration. You have this picture. And by the way, anybody that doesn't believe this, you could just go on the internet and look up Israel currency, and they can find this 500-note bill right across from your preface. Tell us a little bit about that and its meaning.
Well, this 500-note bill from Israel, it's Israeli currency. It's the money that they spend, just like we spend our Federal Reserve notes here. And on that bill is a drawing of Edmund Rothschild. Mm. He is known as the father of Israel. Now, you see, this is the thing. The Rothschild family were operating in Europe, and of course they extended their tentacles around the world through the mechanism of British, what we call British imperialism, which really is actually Rothschild imperialism. And obviously they had their banking houses in all the capitals of Europe, and then, as I say, spread into the United States. But the state of Israel was established by the Rothschild family. When they lent their support to the concept of setting up a Jewish state in Palestine, that became kind of a spiritual base of operations for the international Zionist movement, which was already well ensconced through its financial power. And Israel, of course, has become the centerpiece of the world in a very negative sense, because it's almost as though Israel is the axis upon which the world we live in today revolves. We find ourselves in Iraq because of Israel. We find ourselves on the verge of going to war in Iran because of Israel. We find these neoconservative Jewish Zionists in the Bush administration shaping every single policy, whether domestic or foreign, on the basis of what is good for Zionism, what is good for the state of Israel, what is good for the Rothschild family and all of their lower-level satellites, ranging from the Bronfmans and the Oppenheimers and Rupert Murdoch and company, all the way down to people such as Mortimer Zuckerman, the publisher of the U.S. News and World Report. These powerful Zionists have extended their influence, and it all comes back to the Rothschild family, which played such an important part in setting up the state of Israel. That's why I included that particular photograph there, because it is so important to realize that it is ultimately this one family that has accumulated so many billions, it has to be trillions of dollars. It is their money which is the grease for the Zionist machine. That's what keeps it going. These are people living and walking here on the face of the planet. But their agenda goes much deeper and much higher. And it's an agenda that is anything but Christian. It's just the mirror image, the opposite of Christianity.
Mm. Well, that this is the interesting thing about your book. We start with this Rothschild, with the money, but then there are all of these enemies within. There's an entire network, and you've gone all the way back to the history. You mentioned that August Belmont, a Rothschild agent, was Democratic Party chairman back in the 19th century.
Exactly. Exactly, exactly. This is the, you know, it's funny. I've read official histories of the Rothschild family, and some of these official histories actually claim that the Rothschilds never had any influence in American life. But it's common knowledge. It's common knowledge within American history that August Belmont, who, as you say, was Democratic National Chairman, was an American agent of the Rothschild family. And also, you know, we have these wealthy families here in the United States like the Rockefellers who are certainly of power and influence. But we have to keep in mind that the Rockefeller family originally got their financing for their oil endeavors from Rothschild-influenced or Rothschild-controlled banks in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
American-based banks that were actually fronts for the Rothschild family. So my prediction is that when all is said and done, the Rockefellers will prove in the end to hardly be worth anything at all. They have been propped up by the media as the American power elite, but yet they have been nothing more than fronts for the Rothschilds. I mean, take the Council on Foreign Relations in New York. I know a lot of your listeners are familiar with this very insidious power block.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no question about it that the Rockefeller family has been a primary influence in the Council on Foreign Relations. But what people tend to forget is that the Council on Foreign Relations, as powerful and influential as it is here in the United States, is actually only a junior American cousin, so to speak, of the Royal Institute of International Affairs in London, the RIIA, Royal Institute of International Affairs. And although it's called the Royal Institute, the fact is the Royal Institute is actually the foreign policy arm of the Rothschild family. So basically, these poor American cousins are nothing more than very well-funded front groups for the Rothschild influence.
Mm.
So when we talk about, many people will talk about the Council on Foreign Relations, but they never want to go too deeply into it. They say it's an internationalist group. They say it's, you know, they talk about its insidious influence, but a lot of people are afraid to take that one step further and say, hey, this is really a group that is fronting for the Rothschilds and the international Zionist imperium that the Rothschilds are trying to impose upon the planet.
Well, you know, I noticed many years ago, I used to subscribe to the New American magazine of the John Birch Society. I never was a member of their group or anything, but you know, they did some pretty good articles in their magazine, and they would always talk about that Book of Bear, you know, that horrible Council on Foreign Relations and the Trilateral Commission. But interestingly, they never talked about who was behind it. It was always the monster out there, somehow, some at some level or another, connected with communism. But then come to find out, you know, there were some interesting connections there. In your book, you have the courage to talk about the John Birch Society. And that's why many people have written to me over the years and they said, you know, I don't understand. I used to be a member of the John Birch Society, but now they're going after and they're trying to go after conspiracy theorists. And they seem to be all messed up. And of course, you show the underpinnings of even the founder, of the John Birch Society. But I realized a long time ago that never would they ever touch the synagogue of Satan or the Jewish element. And this goes back to, you know, when I got a degree in political science years ago, you might say the emphasis of my study, Michael, was communism. And I took courses called Soviet Government. Another one was entitled Problems in Communism. And it's interesting, never in one of those books did I know that Vladimir Lenin and Trotsky, the two people who gave us the horrors of the Red Terror, were Jews.
Isn't that interesting? That little part of history has always somehow been, just not mentioned.
I read books by Harvard doctorate people and all these fancy textbooks on communism. And you know, it was like communism just came up out of a vacuum. They didn't tell me Karl Marx was Jewish.
You know, it's kind of interesting because what a lot of people, even a lot of serious students of communism, American patriots who've been anti-communist, and believe me, I'm as anti-communist as anybody, what people don't understand is that even Karl Marx and Engels and all the early philosophers of the communist movement, they said very clearly that before we could have world communism, we would have to have world capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
And what do we have with the Rothschild family? We have world capitalism, this what we call globalization today. We have a small group of people with a massive amount of control financially that they've turned into political power. And so ultimately, what communism was, as communism as we knew it, was just one arm of the Talmudic Jewish imperialism.
Mm.
They used it to break down traditional Christian governments. They may not have been the best governments, but they were Christian to the extent they could be called Christian, I suppose. Christian regimes and Christian traditional Western Christian civilization. They used communism as a mechanism to break it down. And now, of course, you know, if you even look back to the history of the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, these Bolshevik revolutionaries, these ragtag, ugly, very ugly people, if you ever look at some of these people, very ugly, demonic-looking people, look like our friend Alan Dershowitz, the big Yale lawyer, Harvard lawyer. These people were financed by the Rothschild family. These people were financed by these powerful groups and families in the Rothschild sphere of influence. So this is the whole thing, you know. On the one hand, you know, they pretended to be working for the interests of the working people, but in fact they were carrying out the agenda of the Rothschilds. And it's interesting because there were a number of Russian revolutionaries who discovered this. They realized this. They said they realized that they themselves were being taken for a ride. They realized that there were these Judas goats even within their midst. These serious reformers who wanted to make things better for working people realized that they were being used in a very different fashion from what they intended. So this is something that has been historic, and again it all comes back to what Mr. Hitchcock has written in his book, The Synagogue of Satan.
And what you've written in Judas Goats, The Enemy Within. Because I'll tell you, everything that happened in Soviet Russia seems to be a pattern for what we have going on here.
Exactly. I mean, we saw absolute dictatorship there. I mean, our Patriot Act is just a modern day form of the kind of police state they had under the Soviet butchers. I mean, it's the amazing thing about it, Tex, is, and it comes back to what I've written about in the Judas Goats. What we have happening is that, you know, for years, many of my friends in the Patriot community kept saying, "Oh, we've got to elect Ronald Reagan." You know, I remember back in 1984. You know, we've got to elect Ronald Reagan, or in 1980, we've got to elect Ronald Reagan so that we can put an end to abortion.
Oh yeah.
Well, we've had a lot more abortions in this country, and don't forget, it was Ronald Reagan, the good conservative Republican, who gave us our first amnesty for illegal aliens in 1986.
Incredible. We're running out of time here. We're going to have to take a break, Michael. And my discussion today is about Michael Collins Piper's new book, The Judas Goats. We're offering it. Stay with us. We've got a lot more. I'm going to ask about McCarthy. I'm going to ask about J. Edgar Hoover, about Nixon. And, of course, JFK. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. I'm Tex Mars, and we'll be right back. Hello, friends. Again, this is Tex Mars. I want to tell you a little bit about this book, The Judas Goats. You know, the minute I got it in and Michael here has been a friend of the ministry's for quite a while, and I have a great respect for him, and he was so kind to send me one of the first copies of this book. And naturally, I took it home and read it that very night without stopping. And it's quite a read because it's so current. And there's so much in here about history that I was interested in, and it really filled a lot of gaps. Hey, do you really want to know about Timothy McVeigh? Is there an ADL, a Jewish connection with Timothy McVeigh? Well, in chapter 36, you'll read the untold story about what really happened in Oklahoma City. Hey, are we in good hands with Michael Chertoff, the Homeland Security Director? Watch out. Talmudic Justice. Oh, boy. Chapter 39 of this book. Fox News. We can trust Bill O'Reilly, can't we? And Sean Hannity and Alan Combs. Chapter 40 talks about Fox News. You'll want to know about that. The Thought Police. The Zionist takeover of law enforcement. The Israelization of America. Hey, the Republican Party, surely they're not part of this scam, are they? Can't we trust Giuliani and McCain? Well, yeah, I think we can trust them. We can trust them to do exactly what the Zionist puppet masters tell them to do. And you're going to find out about that in the book, The Judas Goats. The Fix Was In, chapter 30, talks about the GOP. But wait, Michael Collins Piper doesn't stop there. Then he goes to the Democrats. And you'll even read the sad story of Jesse Helms. Newt Gingrich, a Judas goat from the beginning. This is the most amazing book. Hey, do you remember back in the old days, back in the 50s, I used to read political columns when I was a teenager in the newspaper, Drew Pearson, Jack Anderson? Well, now they're exposed as media shills for the Anti-Defamation League, the Zionist. That's what they were there for. As well as, there are just so many. I can't even name all the names. J. Edgar Hoover, the FBI. You'll want to find out about the truth about McCarthy, about Nixon. So much in this book. And I believe it will tell you the truth about today. You'll know about doublespeak in the media. You'll know who controls the media. You'll know who is responsible for the communist movement. But as Mr. Piper just explained to you, wait, they don't mind at all working within capitalism. In fact, they're better capitalist than they are communist. They don't have to put on a front. They can be themselves, money-sucking parasites. And boy, you've got to get this book, The Judas Goats, The Enemy Within. Now, this book is $25. As I said, it's 366 pages, footnotes galore, references. You'll love this book. Here's how to get your copy. $25. Please add $4 shipping and handling, a total of $29. Now, just phone us toll-free here in the United States and Canada, 1-800-234-9673. Hey, you can go to powerofprophecy.com. And I believe, in fact, I'm sure, on our home page, we have a picture of this book. Just click on to that little picture of the Judas Goats, and you can order on powerofprophecy.com. Powerofprophecy.com. It's on our homepage as one of our lead books for this month. I'm going to leave it there next month too, because this book is important. It's not just another book. You know, we don't offer books here that are just like other books. This is a book that you can't get almost anywhere else. Now, if you're subscribing to American Freedom News, which I recommend, you'll be able to get this book because they have a book club. Fine, if you want to get it there. If you want to go somewhere else and get it, I'm not going to argue with it. You know, you want to go to Amazon.com, maybe you can get this book. Go wherever you want to, but we're offering it here. And any profit, so-called, that we get, we just plow it right back into the ministry. We really don't have a profit in the books that we sell. But one thing that we do is put it all back in the ministry, and then we keep this radio program going. We keep our newsletter going out to thousands and thousands of people. The truth, we're part of the truth movement. And I know Michael Collins Piper appreciates that. because he is too part of this American nationalist movement. I believe God first, America second. But you know, these people don't believe in those two things at all. They believe in a false god, a Judas goat god, Baphomet, and they hate America. They hate America. I sort of call them the Benedict Arnold Society, but we'll talk about that at a later time. Okay, $25 for this book, $4 shipping and handling, $29. Call us toll free. We'll make sure you get our newsletter, Power of Prophecy. If you're not getting it, we'll put you on our newsletter list. If you're already getting our newsletter, you know what we're going to do for you? We're just going to go ahead and extend your subscription. Absolutely free. When you order this book, you don't even have to ask us. We're going to just extend your subscription. That's why the way we do all of our friends, because our newsletter's free to anybody who buys anything. We appreciate your help so much in this ministry. Appreciate especially your prayers for our health and for wisdom and guidance. Thank you so much. I believe it's working. Sandra, I believe prayers work, don't you? I can see it all the time. We're making progress. We're exposing evil. And boy, they'd like to snuff us out. I know Michael Collins Piper. He has to have a shield of protection by God. How else can he write these books? It's amazing. Okay, let's return to our regular program because Mr. Piper has a lot more to talk about. I'm just going to grill him. He loves to be grilled anyway. He's always ready. You know, the guy's been at places ready to debate people. I don't think the other side really wants to show up when Michael Collins Piper comes to town, except to, maybe to heckle him and try to, you know, try to, that's happened, hasn't it, Michael?
Yeah, I've had the Jewish Defense League come to see me, when I've, tried to, get some honest debate going on about the JFK assassination. I was threatened by Irv Rubin, the founder of the Jewish Defense League, and when I spoke in Canada, I had some, ragtag Jewish agitators show up and try to shut down the hall where I was speaking. So I've become accustomed to it. But you know, one thing I do say, you can judge a man by his enemies.
You know, that's a pretty good statement. You can judge a man by his enemies. Yeah, well, let's talk about those enemies, the enemy within, the Judas goats a little bit. You know, a lot of people are still plagued and perplexed by Richard Nixon. And what happened? Could you shed a little bit of light on what really happened? Was it really just a matter of a little break-in there? I mean, it seems so extreme for this man to lose the presidency. What was really going on?
Well, I tell you, there's several factors at work, but basically it all came down when all was said and done. It had really nothing to do. You know, Richard Nixon was far from perfect. I'm not here to say Richard Nixon was the best thing since sliced bread, and he did a lot of things in the presidency that he shouldn't have. But the whole Watergate thing was, and let's just be candid about it, it was a Jewish Zionist conspiracy from the get-go. I've written about this in Final Judgment, actually, rather than in the Judas Goats.
Yes, that's
true. I think I allude to it in the Judas Goats. So what was happening in the beginning of Richard Nixon's second term was that Nixon had determined that he was going to clean house. Nixon had come to realize he had been in the circles of power here in the United States, obviously, for many years. And as we now know from some of the tapes that have come out, Richard Nixon had some very set opinions about Jewish power and influence in this country. And after his re-election, his overwhelming re-election in 1972, he was beginning to make efforts in one particular area that very few people are unaware of. He was determined to reassess and reestablish and recreate the federal bureaucracy in Washington. He wanted to eliminate many of the longtime Jewish career bureaucrats who were in high-level and mid-level positions of power in the bureaucracy. And this is one of the things that he was planning to do. He was literally planning to clean house. In addition, he was determined to force the Zionist State of Israel to a major sit-down in the Middle East and solve the problems of the region. And he had back-channel operations going on to the Palestinians and to the King of Saudi Arabia, who was very anti-Zionist, And they were basically, what Nixon was saying was, we are going to force Israel and the Zionists to sit down, and we're going to sort this all out. Well, Richard Nixon, of course, had Henry Kissinger in as his Secretary of State. But Nixon was doing these things behind Kissinger's back. And when Kissinger found out about it, Kissinger started to do everything he could to undermine Nixon. Now, this is information that can be found in mainstream sources, but you have to put it all together to understand the bigger picture of what was happening. It had reached a point, the struggle behind the scenes between Nixon and Kissinger and the Zionist lobby, that Nixon told people, he sent a message to the King of Saudi Arabia. He said, in my next State of the Union address, which would have been in 1975, he said, in my next State of the Union address, I'm going to tear up my prepared address and go before the American people on television and radio and explain to them precisely how the Jews are interfering with our foreign policy, and I'm going to call for the American people to join me in trying to break the back of this conspiracy. Now, I'm, of course, paraphrasing. This isn't exactly what Nixon said, obviously, mm-hmm. but this is actually what he was promising to do. Well, in the meantime, of course, the Watergate scandal erupted, and what's very, very interesting is that Deborah Davis, a Jewish girl, wrote a very interesting book about the history of the Washington Post, and in that book, she presents a very, very strong case, which indicates that it was that the famous Deep Throat was not this guy Mark Felt, who everybody now says was Deep Throat. This is an old, senile old man, I'm sorry to say, who they put a book out in his name and made claims for a guy that really couldn't, you know, tell the truth one way or the other, I'm sorry to say. But needless to say, Deborah Davis makes it very, very clear that the Watergate operation and the spying on Richard Nixon was being carried out by a desk, in a CIA desk, in the White House, which was run by James Angleton. James Angleton was the CIA's liaison to the Mossad. In fact, Miss Davis refers to this desk in the White House as literally an Israeli counterintelligence desk. So what we had was the Watergate operation, the spying on Nixon, was being run by Israeli sympathizers in the CIA. They were determined to get Nixon out of there, and that whole Watergate burglary, which was used to bring him down, was obviously deliberately bungled. The intent was for these people to be caught, and of course then the media joined in the chorus against Richard Nixon, and they made Nixon in many respects made mistakes in terms of trying to contain the scandal, and that only made it worse for him. But basically what we saw with Watergate was a Zionist operation to discredit Richard Nixon and to run him out of the White House. And what's very, very interesting is that Vice President Spiro Agnew, who also managed to get himself in trouble over a related thing, and incidentally, just as an aside, those were Jewish businessmen from Maryland who were the ones who gave the testimony that implicated Spiro Agnew in corruption. And if you read Spiro Agnew's book, it's pretty clear that he was set up. But in his book, Agnew says very, very specifically that one of the major forces in the whole Watergate affair was the Zionist influence. Spiro Agnew told people this, including former Congressman Paul Findlay and others, that he definitively believed that it was Zionism that was the prime mover behind the whole Watergate mess. So that's what we had here. The Zionists assassinated Richard Nixon just as much as they assassinated John F. Kennedy.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because in those tapes, Nixon also tells Haldeman, his chief of staff, and Billy Graham, the evangelist, talks about the satanic Jews involved in the conspiracy, and Billy Graham fully agreed with him. And Billy Graham said to Richard Nixon, the president, said, Mr. President, after you're elected for your second term, maybe you can do something about these satanic Jews.
And that's exactly what Nixon thought he was going to be able to do. Nixon Nixon, you know, was a the guy was a scrapper. He was a fighter. He was a street fighter. And, you know, he figured, I'm president of the United States, and I have the power to do it. And he, but you know, Tex, where he misjudged things, where he made a bad gamble, he didn't consider the power of the media. He did not consider the Jewish power over the media. And had it not been, you know, even the media itself, they crow and they gloat that they were the ones who brought down Richard Nixon, and that is exactly who did bring down Richard Nixon, the Jewish media.
Sure, sure, and they used two reporters for the Washington Post that is a Jewish-owned organ itself, and that both the reporters are Jews. So
that's right.
The whole, and then the Daniel Ellsberg, he was a Jew in the Pentagon with the Pentagon Papers. The whole thing was a Jewish conspiracy to get Richard Nixon. And boy, it has had incredible. Am I wrong to say it was basically a coup d'état?
That's exactly what it was. It was as much of a coup d'état as the coup d'état that took place in Dallas. The only difference is that Richard Nixon. Survived physically, but he will go down in history. He is remembered thanks to the media as a corrupt president. And you know, he may not have been the most honest man in the world, but he was no more corrupt than anybody else who's ever been in the White House.
You know, he actually looked physically shaken his last days. I believe he was afraid for his life, maybe the lives of his wife and children. At the end there, they may have threatened him to such an extent.
You know, he fought to the last, but there was no way, let's face it, there was no way that he could have ever come out of it. And he, if necessary, they might have killed him. That's all speculation, of course, but he gave up the ghost, as they say, and, you know, that's the history of the thing. You know, it's, I've given here just today, just a very brief thumbnail sketch of what happened, but as I say, it's all very carefully documented in Final Judgment, in my book Final Judgment, the whole story of Watergate there. So it's, again, it's all part and parcel, coming back to the Judas Goats, it's all part and parcel of how infiltrators can manipulate things, because that's what happened. The guys in the CIA who deliberately bungled the Watergate burglary, they were Judas Goats.
Yeah.
They were there pretending to be on Nixon's side, but in fact they were setting him up.
Now this Jesus James Angleton, the deputy director of the CIA, this was the guy that after he left office and died in this high position in the CIA, it came out that some of the defectors from Soviet communism, he actually turned back over to the communists. And they were slaughtered.
Angleton was a very enigmatic individual who many believe was actually, you know, for years Angleton was running around talking about the necessity of finding the mole, the Soviet mole inside the CIA.
Yes.
A lot of people in the CIA believe that it was Angleton who was that mole.
So the mole was looking for the mole.
And in the Judas Goats, this is another thread that I follow in detail. What a lot of people don't realize is, now, of course, Joseph Stalin was no Mr. Nice Guy. And a lot of people misinterpret what I say in the Judas Goats as some sort of praise for Joseph Stalin. It's not praise. It is just a simple statement of fact. What was happening in the Soviet Union in the 1930s was that Joseph Stalin, who had scrambled his way to the top, Joseph Stalin began to have a behind-the-scenes war that erupted into a full-scale war with the Jewish elements inside Bolshevism, led by Leon Trotsky. And then what happened was, after Trotsky was kicked out of the Soviet Union by Stalin, and of course Stalin still had many Jewish executioners running the show for him, but Stalin himself was turning against the Jews and was trying to consolidate his own power. As a consequence of that, what happened was that many of these internationalist Trotskyite Jews began turning quote-unquote anti-communist. That's where they transmogrified. I like that word. They transmogrified into being critics of the Soviet Union. And these were the people, these Trotskyites, who are the forerunners of our modern-day neoconservatives. So basically what the neoconservatives are, and always have been Jewish Zionist communists.
Okay, so we're talking about the entire ring of top bureaucrats around George W. Bush and Dick Cheney running the U.S. government. We know that Cheney and Bush are just puppets, but they're, you know, whether it's a Wolfowitz, who of course is over at the, or was until recently with the World Bank, or Rumsfeld, or the little guy who wrote the perverted sex novel and was recently indicted. What was his name? Libby Lewis.
Libby, yes.
Irving. Let's just call him Irving, the Jewish secret agent there. The AIPAC people, all those agents that they had put in there, Colonel Franklin and all the others. So all of these people basically come from this Trotskyite, the hardcore communist element. But they turned anti-communist only when communism itself was hijacked by a guy who became convinced he had to do away with the Jews because they were going to do away with him.
Exactly. That's it in a nutshell. And see, this is what's interesting because, you know, as I say, I have always been anti-communist. There's nothing admirable about communism. There was nothing admirable about the Soviet police state. But what was happening was, in the 1950s, this era of what we call the Cold War, what was happening was that the Jewish Trotskyites were coming to power and influence in the United States, and they wanted to undermine Joseph Stalin. So all of a sudden, these Trotskyites became, quote-unquote, anti-communist. Well, they were actually anti-Stalin. And what they started doing is they started to take over in the highest levels the American anti-communist movement. William F. Buckley Jr., when he set up his magazine National Review in the 1950s, who did he staff it with? A bunch of ex-Trotskyites. Or I shouldn't say ex-Trotskyites. They were still Trotskyites, but now they were calling themselves conservatives.
Sort of like
this
guy.
Now they're calling themselves anti-communists.
Do you see that in this guy, David Horowitz, who claimed,
good example,
who goes on and says, yes, I used to be a pro-communist, but now I've seen the light and I'm a conservative Republican. He's on Fox News and all these places claiming to be a, you know, a neocon conservative. So Horowitz is sort of your perfect model or perfect storm of a...
Absolutely. Uh-huh. Perfect example, Tex, right there. There's a very, very good example of it. And this is what has happened to the American anti-communist movement since, and particularly it began in the 1970s. I remember going to conservative and anti-communist meetings here in Washington, D.C., and there might be one or two Jews in attendance. And, you know, it's funny because people would say, oh, yes, he's Jewish, but he's a wonderful conservative. Well, as time went by, then all of a sudden I started to see a lot of Jewish anti-communists speaking. And these were the forerunners of what we know today as the neoconservatives. And everybody was saying, oh, isn't it wonderful? The Jews are now becoming anti-communists.
Now, let me ask you this. You gave us a real insight into the Nixon affair. I wonder, of course, Nixon was Republican. Do you think that part of this, you mentioned this really began to take shape in the 70s with these previously, we would just call them super liberal communist Jews, suddenly proclaiming their neoconservative credentials. But I wonder, you know, they were already within the Democrat Party, you know, from the days of FDR, Dewey, and all those, not Dewey, but Truman. And now I'm wondering if maybe they were quite scared by Nixon and some of the Republicans, and maybe they said it's time for us to take over the Republican Party.
That's a very interesting insight. And you know, I wish I had said that. I wish I had written that
Well, I probably got the idea from your book, The Judas Goats, well, because but it leads to that.
It's very interesting because I think you're absolutely right there. You know, what was happening was that the Jews had become so influential and so supreme in the Democratic Party that they had maybe put, they realized they had put their eggs too much, put their proverbial eggs in one basket.
Mm.
And they realized that they needed to get in there and control the opposition, because if there were ever a serious, shall we say, Richard Nixon-style Republican, like Pat Buchanan, I have some questions about Pat Buchanan, but basically what they wanted to ensure was that they were definitely ensconced in both of the major political parties.
Never see another Nixon again.
No, exactly. And what has happened now, though, what has happened is, it's kind of interesting what's happened to the Democrats, is that there is a hardcore within the Democratic Party who, because they're people who are against war and against imperialism and against violence, you know, people very sincere, they are now beginning to realize that Zionism and Israel have been a very pernicious influence. And as a consequence of that, this is why there has been a major transformation of a lot of Jewish money into the Republican Party, because they see that in some respects, and I'm certainly no liberal Democrat, don't get me wrong here, folks, but what's happening is that there are a lot of people, grassroots Democratic voters, who don't like these Zionist policies. They don't like the U.S. foreign policy, this New World Order policy that's being pursued by the Bush administration. And as a consequence of that, even though there's still this Jewish power and influence in the Democratic Party, they're now very much in charge of things in the Republican Party. And that's all been part of these Judas Goats who have been infiltrating into the conservative movement over the years. I'm sorry to say, there's a lot of good people in the John Birch Society. One of my best friends died a few years ago. He was a strong member of the John Birch Society. But the Birch Society played a major role in promoting the interests of Zionism within the ranks of the Patriot movement.
Yes.
Then there were publications like Human Events that started out as good, hardline, traditional American nationalist patriots. They were the ones who opened the doors for these Trotskyites, these neoconservatives, to come into the ranks of the Republican Party, into the ranks of the conservative think tanks, to the point that now they are all controlled, I repeat, all controlled, lock, stock, and barrel, by the Jewish Trotskyites.
They really are. Ron Paul is the only one I know that isn't controlled by these people.
Yeah, Ron Paul. Now, there's a good man. Ron Paul is a good man, and you can see how the media is treating him.
Oh, wow. I'll tell you what, we're out of time. We've just had such a great time exposing these people. I like to do that, Michael, and you must too.
It's a dirty job, but somebody has to do it.
Well, that's right. Well, I don't think it's a dirty job. You know, it's a cleanup job. That's
well,
why
you know, you're
cleaning the
right.
dirt, really. But I know what you're
right
do.
About that.
You
know, just had my apartment renovated, and it was one big mess. But I tell you what, now that it's been cleaned up, it's a real joy. So
hey,
that's kind of what we're doing, too.
It really is. And I know the people out there really appreciate you. They appreciate the work you've been doing these many, many years. And I want to tell you, I admire you. And by the way, I should have let people know about your tremendous program on the Republic Broadcasting Network. It's every night, I believe, isn't it?
Yeah, it's every night between 9 and 10 Eastern Time at republicbroadcasting.org and at 5.050 on shortwave.
Again, thank you very much. And folks, you've been listening to Power of Prophecy. And our prayer is always you'll tune in each week and discover the power of prophecy.